blind Japanese pianist Nobuyuki Tsuji playing Grieg's Piano Concerto in Liverpool, UK in February 2018 with the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra and conductor Vasily Petrenko. Nobuyuki Tsuji, who has been blind since birth, was joint gold medal winner, age 20, at the 2009 Van Cliburn International Piano Competition in Fort Worth, Texas, USA. Welcome to Classical Music Daily's October 2022 newsletter, which includes a special feature on classical music and visual disability. The discussion is chaired by John Dante Prevedini in the USA, and the other contributors are Charlotte Hardwick in the UK, Halida Dinova in the USA, Robert McCarney in Spain, Giuseppe Panisi in Italy, and me, Keith Bramich, in the UK. So this is John, Charlotte, who's going to lead the discussion today.
Hello, Charlotte. Pleased to meet you. This is John.
You too.
Hello. Good morning to everyone.
Good morning.
Good afternoon to everyone, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
Good morning, Keith. This is Robert. I just had an idea last night that about the discussion this afternoon. One relevant point maybe was that I do remember that when I was thinking about going to university and when I was finishing secondary school, I was thinking about, I really wanted to study music at university level. And the main reason I decided not to was because I just thought that it would be so difficult with my vision problems, because basically I can't sight read, or I can never play an instrument and sight read at the same time, because anything I read has to be so close that would just make playing an instrument at the same time impossible. Or likewise, I would never be able to see instructions from a conductor, for example. So I'm just wondering, I don't know now what happens, like, for example, for people who are seriously visually impaired, who do want to study music, what adaptations have they made for people like me, or worse, who do want to study? And I mean, how do they adapt things, or do they adapt things so that people can read scores, or, as I said, sight read? That was a major issue for me, I remember. So that could be a point worth discussing.
So this is John speaking. Keith has just played a message that was pre-recorded by Robert McCarney. And the question posed was whether there had been any recent advances in technology or technique so that musicians with visual disabilities would be able to sight read in order to perform in an ensemble setting. And so I would be willing to open the floor up to any discussion on the matter if anyone has any insight into this question. Welcome. Hello, I see that Robert has just joined us. Charlotte, do you have something that you would like to say? You mentioned that you had a comment about Robert's question.
Absolutely. I have been to university and have done a music degree. I use Braille music because I don't have any sight at all. And there were some teething problems when I first started. But the university were able to purchase some specialist technology, which is a scanning and transcription program, where you can scan the music in to a program, then you import the music into an editing program, and then you can edit the program again. And it's a special program that you can emboss the music, and that prints it into Braille music. The scanning program isn't always accurate, so a lot of editing needs to be done. I myself don't actually use the scanning program very often now. I either type it directly into the computer with somebody dictating the words and notes to me, or now there's an even better solution, whereas if somebody sends me a piece of music in a music XML format, I can import this into my special program Lime very easily. And sometimes some editing still needs to be done, but often it does come out very accurately. Then I import it into this program called GoodFeel, which turns it into a Braille music file. And that's what I used at university. I didn't use the XML files at university. I had a support worker that transcribed the majority of my music for me. And as a singer, I can use the music while I'm singing. With solo singing, I did perform from memory, but I was in three choirs, and I am in three choirs now. And that's how I can take part with Braille music. Now, with Braille music, because you've got the words and music, it's not possible to read both at the same time. So depending on what sort of a piece the music is, I may start off with reading the notes, and then when I know the notes, read the words. Or if it's just Amen, for example, for several bars, I know what the words are, so I can just concentrate on the notes. And adaptations did have to be made to a certain extent. As far as possible, I was treated the same as the others. But for example, in exams, I had extra time because Braille takes longer. And it was, as I said, there were teething problems, but overall, eventually things fell into place and I was able to get my music degree.
Thank you very much, Charlotte. This is John speaking. I'm very interested to know if you are aware of or have seen any advances in technology that would enable people with limited or no vision to sight read music in real time, as opposed to being forced to memorize and then play from memory with a Braille score.
That isn't possible at the moment because you read Braille entirely with your fingers. The only way that it might work is if you can read one line with one hand and one line with your other hand at the same time. I'm unfortunately not able to do that. I mean, technology is definitely improving all the time, but there are going to be some difficulties. The main thing is with a visual disability is you just can't be spontaneous. The technology is there to do it very quickly, but the more notice, the better. Leaving things till the last minute does make it much more difficult.
Charlotte, would you be able to, this is John again, would you be able to describe a little bit more about your musical practice in terms of what kinds of ensembles that you're in and what size of ensemble you perform in on a regular basis?
Okay, well, I'm in three choirs. I'm in my local church choir, which I think probably has a group of, I don't know the exact amount, I would say between 20 and 30. And for that choir, we sing services every Sunday. So I need an anthem every week. I've got my Braille hymn book. I've just got the words for the hymns because the majority of hymns, I do know the tunes, unless there's something new, which I need transcribing. But I tend to use my Orbit reader to read the hymns, which is a small machine, which has a Braille display on it. So you have the files on an SD card and you put the card in the machine and the machine has a Braille display, so I can read off the machine. The music I need to read off paper because at the moment, the machine I've got, you can only read one line at a time, whereas for music, you need two. So I need, as I said, I need an anthem every week for that choir and a psalm and the hymns and the mass setting. And once a month, we do evensong as well. And the other two choirs I'm in, one of them is Canterbury Choral Society, which I think it consists of around 150 people. And we normally do major works. So we're currently doing the B minor Mass. We'll be doing Messiah after Christmas. We'll be doing a carol concert. We'll be doing Messiah after Christmas, then the Bach St. John Passion, and then the Brahms German Requiem. Sometimes we do programmes which consists of more separate pieces, but the majority of time we do the major works, and we normally perform in Canterbury Cathedral. We regularly perform there. The other choir I sing in is called the Amici Chorus, and I'm not sure exactly how many we have there. I think it's probably between 50 and 70 odd at present. Numbers dwindled after COVID. And we do a variety in that choir. We do some of the bigger works. At Christmas time, we are performing some extracts from Messiah. Last term, we sang the Fore Requiem. That was the first concert I had sung with them for a while, because that was the first concert we actually did since COVID. But again, in this choir, we've done things like the Brahms Requiem. It's a non-audition choir. Choral Society is an audition choir as well. I hope that's given you an idea.
Absolutely. I'm also interested to know if you ever perform chamber or solo repertoire.
Yes, I do perform solos as well. I sometimes sing solos in church. And I have taken part in a lot of competitions, but they haven't been available for some time now. They seem to have stopped happening for some reason. I'm not quite sure why. I think the problem was not many people were entering them. But I have performed when I was at school. I've performed in the Royal Albert Hall, which was a really wonderful experience. And I've also performed in India as well, and that was also a wonderful experience. I'm now going to sing a short piece from the Beggar's Opera, and it's called Seashore Funny, and it's sung by Polly Peachum, who's a rather mischievous character in the opera.
That was Charlotte Hardwick singing at her own 40th birthday concert in 2021. The pianist was Ian Carmalt.
Thank you very much. This is John again. I'd like to open up the floor to anyone else who has any similar comments or observations about what you have seen regarding Braille music or XML technology related to Braille music. Has anyone encountered this technology before, or has anyone seen it in use in their ensemble or solo practice as performers or teachers? If not, then I'm interested to ask another question, and that is, can anyone comment on the issue of whether conductors are helpful for musicians with visual disabilities?
This is Charlotte again. To be honest, not really for somebody with no sight at all. People may disagree with me, but I personally don't feel they are. I wouldn't say to a conductor that they shouldn't conduct, because the majority of people are sighted. So I wouldn't say a conductor shouldn't conduct, but I don't find it particularly helpful to me. It's not impossible, because people have said, well, how do you know when to come in? And normally I can tell when the others are going to come in, because we all do a big breath together. So I may not always be dead accurate all the time, but it's not impossible.
Thank you very much for your comment. This is John again. I'm interested, Charlotte, if you or if anybody else can imagine or is aware of a type of technology that is able to convey the physical motions of a conductor into a tactile or other format of information input, so that people without sight can experience information that the conductor is trying to convey.
Yes, this is Charlotte again. Well, a few years ago, I took part in an opera project, and they tried to develop some technology so that a blind person could follow a conductor, which was a device that vibrated when the conductor beated time. But unfortunately, it wasn't finished at all. There were problems with funding the project, and for all sorts of reasons, and it unfortunately never came in use, which was a real shame. But it could have worked, because I think the program needed to be done via a computer, and then I think Bluetooth to the remote control device. Now, we never got the remote control device completely right, because it was something you had to hold in your hand, which wouldn't have worked if you're trying to follow a Braille score. So it probably would have been better if they could have invented it so that the vibrating thing had a strap so that you could attach it to your arm. As I didn't have that much opportunities to work with it, but it's something that could have been, it really could have worked if it was just the lack of support with it, I think, which was a shame.
Thank you, Charlotte. This is John again. This is a fascinating discussion, and it does remind me a bit of what most musicians, including musicians who have sight, have experienced during the COVID lockdown, because as I'm sure we all remember, performances often occurred virtually, and wireless / internet technology is not always a useful or practical means to depend on when we are doing something that requires exact, precise, time-sensitive coordination as a performance. And so when you are relying on a Bluetooth to relay the motions of the conductor's pattern to an ensemble, in many ways it presents the same problems as a distance virtual rehearsal situation. So I think that's something that we can all bear in mind, that when we're relying on wireless or internet technology to convey musical information in a real-time performance setting, it does present some problems. And in many ways, I think the ability to communicate in real time is dependent on that technology. At this time, I do have a question that has been posed that I'd like to read. John, could you ask Charlotte if she knows any instrumentalists who have studied like her, as I believe she sings only? So in other words, please correct me if I'm mistaken in my interpretation of this question, but I believe the question is asking, do you know of any instrumentalists who have studied using a Braille system exclusively?
Yes, I do know instrumentalists. And I'm sorry, I wasn't able to get anybody else on here today to talk to you, because that may have been very useful. But I do know instrumentalists, yes. I definitely know a flautist and recorder player, clarinetist. If you're playing an instrument, you do have to perform from memory. You can use the music to learn from. Use the Braille music to learn from, which is what they do, but you would have to memorize the music. You wouldn't be able to play and read at the same time.
Right, right. This is John again. And that is something that I was thinking about in preparation for today's topic of discussion, because I am mindful that instrumentalists require the use of their hands to play their instrument, and therefore their hands are unavailable to read the Braille. Would you say, Charlotte, that that singers do not necessarily have an advantage either in this issue?
I think we do to a certain extent, but we still can't just be given a piece of music and say, right, just sight read this. That just isn't possible. For example, if I'm having to do a sight reading test for an exam, I would be given longer, because it does take longer to learn from a Braille score. And for example, in my grade 8 singing exam, I had to do a sight reading test, but I was allowed just to sing it without words, so that I didn't have to worry about words as well. And obviously you wouldn't sing without words in a major performance, but that's why it takes longer. And as I say, I do use music in my choirs all the time. I don't memorize absolutely everything. I do use the music, but for example, the B minor mass, there's so many notes in that piece, but the words are very repetitious. So I mainly concentrate on the notes, reading the notes. And I mean, I've done the B minor mass twice now, so this is the third time. The first time it was very, very hard. It was probably one of the hardest pieces I've ever done. And I did get lost from time to time as well. And I often do get lost when I'm trying to follow a choral score. And if bar numbers are marked in the score, that's really, really useful. If I don't have any bar numbers and the conductor does, then that creates problems.
That was Richard Cook rehearsing one of Charlotte's choirs, the Canterbury Choral Society, in Orff's Carmina Burana in April 2017.
Thank you, Charlotte. This is John again. While we're on the subject again of Braille scores, I'm very interested to know if you have any ideas about, hypothetically, whether the current Braille music system in use could be improved in any way to make it more efficient, to make it more intuitive. I myself am admittedly unfamiliar with how Braille system works in music. Do you think that the current system that's in use is practical, or is there room for improvement?
I'm not really sure how you could improve a Braille score, because there's just no way around it. You've got to have a line of words in the line of music. You just can't follow both at the same time. You can't just sight read both at the same time. You can follow both at the same time by reading the line of words, then the line of music. I think the improvement, it does take up a lot of space, because you do need wider paper than the standard A4, really, because you can fit more on a line if you have wider paper. I think A4 is about 28 characters per line. I think you can get 30 with a push, but for Braille, it's recommended that you have 40 characters per line, so that you can have the line of words, then the exact line of music to match it. As I said, I've got one electronic machine, but you can only read one line at a time. Now, there is something being developed. There's already been something that's been developed where you can have several lines. And I did try out one of these machines back in 2018. But it's still not the most practical machine, because you can't have batteries in it. It's only mains operated at the moment, so that wouldn't be very easy to use in rehearsals. And also, it's more expensive than we hoped it was going to be. I mean, it's still cheap compared to some Braille displays. There is a new machine, an upgraded version of the machine I currently have, that does have 40 cells and three lines, but it's not on the market yet. And as soon as it's on the market, I definitely will want to go and try it out. Because if I could get one of those, if it works and I could get one of those machines somehow, that would be very useful, because then I could have a lot of my music on that. So I wouldn't have to have so much paper. And it would take up less space, because my shelves are just jam-packed with Braille music, and I'm having trouble fitting in new pieces because I just haven't got room. I really do need to have it sort out, because my shelves are just absolutely cluttered, and I've got stuff all over the floor, which isn't great. I do need to seriously sort it out, because it's all in a muddle. But electronic files would be a lot easier.
Great. Thank you very much, Charlotte. This is John again. I'd like to move on to a new question. This I'd like to open up to anybody who has a comment on it. And that is, which live streaming services do you think are most useful for audience members with visual disabilities? So the topic is live streaming services that are ideal.
The worst platform is definitely Facebook Live, because I do have connection with two churches, and the old church I used to go to, I used to attend their morning prayer regularly, twice a week before COVID. And since COVID, when COVID started, they were streaming it via Facebook Live, which is very, very difficult to navigate. It's virtually impossible. I mean, I have managed to get onto it, but by the time I've got, if I can get onto it, it's the service has already started, because the where you click on the live section, that doesn't show until the service has started. But because Facebook is such a cluttered platform, very, very busy, the bit where you're meant to click isn't always in the same place. So it's the worst possible platform, I think. And it's just very, very difficult to navigate. And I've really pleaded very hard for them to try and use a different platform, but I haven't succeeded at all. The service is put up on YouTube afterwards, which I can access. YouTube is very easy to use, but I want to be able to access the live version so that I'm taking part at the same time as the others. And YouTube Live would be much more simple. I can definitely use that. I've used that for other churches that use it. And that's very easy to use, because if you get a link sent by email, you just tap on the link and it will play. Or if you subscribe to the channel on your phone, you just go to your subscriptions, which is very easy to do. And the first thing will come up is the live program. And you just tap on it and it will start playing as soon as the service starts. It will start. If you start early, if you click on early, you're not in any difficulty, because you just leave it, and as soon as the service starts, it will just start playing. Another platform that is accessible is something called Church TV, because I've tried this before, because my old church do stream their Sunday services this way, and I can access that, because you need to star the email with the link on it so that you don't have to find the email every time. If you've got it starred, it's easier to find it. And then just click on the double tap is in my case with the phone. Just double tap on the link and then flick to the right a few times until it says the word live, and then tap again and that will play. I've asked if the morning prayer can be streamed this way, but I haven't succeeded with that either. Zoom services are very good as well. My new church did do some Zoom services during lockdown, which was fantastic, because I felt, although we can't do things like singing together because of the time delay, you still can't sing together on a Zoom service, or you can't speak together. So, for example, a morning prayer, rather than everybody joining in responses, we would split it so that one person would do one set of responses, one person would read the words of the psalm, one person would say the Magnificat, etc. But during lockdown, that was brilliant, and I begged my old church to do that as well, but I didn't get any success, unfortunately. But yeah, Zoom is good. Zoom's good because you can have the interaction. YouTube and Church TV, you can't interact the same way, but it's still accessible.
Great, thank you very much, Charlotte. This is John again. I think this is a good time to continue into the last major question for today's forum, which is, can anyone, this is open to all people present, can anyone comment on the issue of general inclusivity for performers and audience members with visual disabilities? How can the culture and practice of classical music be more inclusive towards performers and audiences with visual disabilities? So this could be a live streaming question. This could be a question about notation. This could be a question about conductors. It could be a question that involves teaching practice or marketing or performance, among others.
It's Keith here. Robert told me that the notes in CD booklets are too small. The characters are too small in CD booklets. I think that's a problem with having downsized from LPs to CDs, really, because they're trying to put so many notes in a small space. But that's one thing that I remember he told me.
I am aware of large, this is John again speaking, I'm aware of large print music being definitely an advantage for people with partial sight who are musicians. I'm curious if the advent of digital album liner notes are an improvement over the CD for people who require larger text in order to read, because on an electronic device, oftentimes we have the ability to zoom in and to enlarge text. Is that a situation where the digital format is preferable to the older CD format? I have received confirmation from someone who is contributing that this is definitely the case. By the way, if there is anybody here who wishes to contribute but is unable to speak or to use the microphone, I'm happy to read aloud their contributions in the Zoom chat. So if you have a comment that you wish for me to read or a question that you would like to ask me or have me ask the group, I'm happy to read your submissions in the chat box. Is there anyone else who has any comment on the general question of inclusivity for audiences and performers with visual disability?
It's Charlotte again here. It's also about, it's really important that we can have access to programs, whether you're a performer or a member of the audience, because I've been to the proms a few times, which I love, but they can't provide Braille programs, which is a shame. And that would be really helpful to be able to have Braille programs. I mean, you can hear the commentary. If you have headphones, you can listen to the Radio 3 commentary, which I've done, but sometimes it doesn't always work very well. The signal's not always very good, and it doesn't always work.
Thank you. This is John again. I'm interested to know if there are any innovations or current practices underway that allow people without complete vision to experience subtitles in opera performances.
I think some theaters have audio description, and some shows are audio described.
Is this generally a spoken recitation of the translation?
I'm not sure if it's of the translation. It's possible that's included, but I think they describe what's actually happening as well. They describe any visual aspects of it, a bit like with the TV program, because my TV's got audio description. So if films are audio described, then there's commentary of what's happening visually.
Thank you. This is John again. Anyone else have any additional comments on this particular question they would like to contribute? Thank you. I'm receiving a question from a contributor. And I'm reading verbatim. It's a far more general point and maybe not so relevant, but I think the fact that blind and visually impaired people can enjoy music just as well as those with full vision shows we put far too much emphasis on image, visuals in classical music. And yes, this is from Robert. This is from Robert McCarney.
We certainly can enjoy music just as much as sighted people. Definitely.
Thank you very much. I would like to open up the balance of the discussion. If anyone would like to share any general announcements or local classical news developments. Does anyone have any particular projects that they're working on or professional announcements that they would like to share with the forum.
Yes. Khalida. Khalida Dinova. My beloved mentor and teacher, Anatoly Gorsky, brilliant pianist, is turning 80 years old on the 27th of September. He's extremely accomplished pianist, teacher, and brilliant person. He has so many interests. I was so fortunate to study with him in Conservatory of St. Petersburg, Russia, in years 87 through 89 too. So the Deutsche Grammophon came out with release of his entire input of recordings. It's a very impressive box. This is the recordings of Anatoly Gorsky.
May I contribute something? So what Khalida is now demonstrating is a new collection of recorded works that has been released.
Yes, it has been released in year 2018, actually, but Ugorsky was teaching in St. Petersburg Conservatory until the collapse of Berlin Wall, then he immigrated to Germany as soon as it became possible. And from that point, his career skyrocketed. It just was total meteoric rise. And he was able to sustain that meteoric rise. It was not easy. First year was very difficult, of course, adaptation to the West. He has not been involved with any managers or anything, but the few home concerts he gave in Berlin, and he met some people, and they tried to record fragments of Diabelli variations by Beethoven, and that brought totally furor in Deutsche Grammophon company. After that was Schumann and Schubert project, David Zwingler dances, and Wonder Fantasy, and then Messiaen catalog Hasso. Then was most amazing Brahms project, all the piano sonatas and Handel variations, which considered the best of Deutsche Grammophon. It's placed in certain box with other best recordings of Brahms. Then was Chopin project. Chopin project with other pianists such as Marta Argerich and Paulini. He just was invited to contribute polonaises and some rarely performed pieces. The also most impressive Beethoven sonatas number 32 and 6 bagatelles, like late Beethoven, after Deutsche Grammophon, after Diabelli was probably late Beethoven. Then my favorites in that recording is Mussorgsky Pictures and Exhibition and Stravinsky Petrushka disc. Thank you. I was present during one recording, which was made in Chicago with Chicago Symphony and Pierre Boulez conducting. It was Scriabin Concerto and Le Poème de Ecstasy, Prometea. It was absolutely unforgettable concert, and recording was, of course, not public, but it was recording that resulted from that is really very rare and beautiful. I can recite some praise. His playing was unlike anything I have ever heard. Anatoly Gorsky is absolutely splendid, technically assured and musically affecting. That was New York Times. Anatoly Gorsky's besides technical, you know, he's a man of great integrity. What is rare about this musician, he doesn't believe in careers resulting from competition victories. He was telling us that either you cannot live without performing or you should not concentrate on performance. Competition may open some doors, but the permanent development is a key. He said, now I'm playing much better than I played when I was in my 30s. And now when I'm 78, I'm playing even better. So in age of 78, he went on tour of Asia and he played Liszt B minor sonata and Stravinsky Petrushka, among other things. The core of his pedagogics, he gave us keys to open many styles and just skill for life, I would say. He would never enforce any of his ideas on how to perform that piece. There is no routine, no some so-called interpretation that he believes on, but he would somehow direct in a correct way. But first year when I went to teach, he said, main thing is learn to listen. If you hear something live in that performance, maybe it's clumsy, person cannot express himself, just help him to express himself.
Great, thank you very much.
Teaching is all about improving what you just heard.
Great, thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry to rush along, but we have only a few minutes left, and I would like to open up the floor and give anyone else a chance to make personal or professional announcements, or to offer any other comments on the topic of the forum.
It's Keith speaking again. I just wanted to say that Jim Hutton, the violinist from the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra, who joined us about a year ago, has just retired from the RLPO. And so I just wanted to wish him all the best for his retirement.
Thank you very much. Keith, is there anything else that you would like to add regarding Classical Music Daily in general?
Only really that we publish something every day, assuming I can keep going. At the moment, I'm not feeling very well, but every day we publish something at classicalmusicdaily.com, and you're welcome to have a look every day, have a listen to various things.
Well, then I would like to thank everyone who was able to join us today. I think this has been a wonderful discussion. I've learned a great deal, and I hope to see you all again sometime very soon.
John?
Yes?
I would like to apologize because my PC, my desktop PC, didn't seem to work. I mean, I couldn't hear you. Now, okay. I went to my laptop PC and I can hear you. So I've been pretty much silent throughout all the meeting. I hope to do better next time. I have a number of reviews that I will send during the month of October to Keith, because we have a very busy opera season in three different venues, you know. And if my health allows me, I plan to go to quite a number of performances. Thank you very much to everybody. Thank you. Keith, how is your COVID?
Okay. It's not, I don't have very serious symptoms, so it's okay, thanks.
Very, I'm very happy. I'm really happy. Thank you to everybody.
Thank you.
And thank you, John, for organizing it, setting in at short notice and organizing it.
Oh, it's no trouble, Keith. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And here's a final word from Robert. The article he mentions is listed in the links on the page associated with this newsletter.
John read out one point I made about the overemphasis on visuals. My idea about this overemphasis, in one way, it was sparked by an article, a very, very, very good and interesting article written by Philip Clark. I don't even know if Philip Clark is a journalist and a composer. He's written for Gramophone and The Guardian and various other things. But he wrote an article about this in 2015. I'll send you a link via email. And it's an article inspired by a very good friend of his who is blind, and about this aspect of visuals and music. And just one other thing, if you want to include another musical sample, again, it may not be relevant because it's the great jazz musician, Pharoah Sanders, the great saxophonist. He passed away on Friday at the age of 81. For me, an extraordinary musician.